The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 4, text number 38. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari. Recorded on June 9th, 2013, in Lanesha, South Africa.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Na hi gyanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tat svayam yoga sansiddha kalena atmani vindati nahi gyanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tat svayam yoga sansiddha kalinat mani vindati nahi gyanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tat svayam yoga sansiddha kalinat mani vindati na nothing he certainly kyanena with knowledge sadrisham in comparison pavitram sanctified iha in this world vidyate exists tat that svayam himself yoga in devotion sansiddha he who is mature kalena in course of time atmani in himself vindati enjoys. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Purport. When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita. So here we are talking about transcendental knowledge. Reading transcendental knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita and from Srila Prabhupada. And we are learning that what we are engaged in right now, this very minute, there's nothing more sublime and pure than this. There's nothing more ecstatic, nothing more enlivening, nothing more uplifting, nothing more wonderful, nothing more wondrous, nothing more amazing, nothing more stupendous than this transcendental knowledge. I mean, it's right up there with Prasadam and Kirtan. It is Kirtan, actually. It's another form of Kirtan, you see. Who was the most famous acharya of Kirtan? Shukadeva Goswami. He's the acharya of Kirtan. And what was his Kirtan? Reciting the Bhagavatam. Was he playing Madanga, Kartals, harmonium, or whatever? No. He was giving discourse on Bhagavatam, and that he is therefore considered the acharya of Kirtan. So this is Kirtan also, you see. This is the Sankirtan movement, so this is another type of Sankirtan, to talk about the most wonderful thing that you can find anywhere in the three worlds or beyond the three worlds, and that is transcendental knowledge. So how do you get this experience where you can relish transcendental knowledge as complete satisfaction? Where you don't need anything, as Prabhupada says, you don't need anything externally, you see? One who is situated in transcendental knowledge need not search elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. See, if our minds are disturbed, we think, well, turn up the heat, it's a little cold, or it's too hot, turn on the air conditioning, or I don't have enough money, so go get some more money so I can be peaceful. You know, like, we want to make some material adjustment to be peaceful. That's our normal way of trying to become peaceful. Well, I'm agitated as a brahmachari, so I better get married. Or I'm not happy having any kids, so I got to try to get pregnant to have some kids. You know, all these adjustments to try to find taste, peace, and happiness, you see. But actually, the only real adjustment we have to make is right here, you see. We have to adjust our consciousness. That's all we really have to do. You see? You just have to fine-tune your consciousness. Refine it, you see. It's like you can get a diamond. You have diamond mines here in South. You know, your country is famous for diamond mines. But they take those diamonds and then they refine the diamonds, you see. So you can have raw transcendental knowledge, which is our neophyte stage, you see. We've got the knowledge, but it's raw right now, you see. But by continually hearing and discussing, that's why we have classes regularly, you know. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By discussing this knowledge and by practicing the knowledge, which is the laboratory portion of the course. Just like you take a chemistry course, you go to the lecture and you hear that H2O equals what? Water. Then what do you do in the laboratory? You combine them in the test tube. I remember when I did that when I was a kid. Wow, it's real. I combined two parts oxygen and lo and behold, what do I have in my test tube? But water, you see. So the classes are the time to discuss the theory, the knowledge, you see. And then when we do the kirtan, we do the cooking, the cleaning, the book distribution, the deity worship, all the aspects of Navavidha Bhakti, that is the laboratory, you see. We actually put the knowledge into practice, and what do we get in the test tube? Krishna consciousness. Wow. You see? We talked about it. We read about it, we heard about it, and now it's happening. I'm getting this magical, transcendental experience in my consciousness. I'm getting Krishna consciousness. You see? I really like what Krishna says here. He says, when you're accomplished in the practice of devotional service, you enjoy this knowledge within yourself. That means when you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, you don't need anything to be blissed out. They can lock you in a prison cell. It doesn't matter. You can be in any situation. And you just by connecting with Krishna through love, you see, feel the mood of love. You see, accepting Krishna. Krishna is actually present, but we don't experience Krishna. Prabhupada says, when the absolute truth is covered by Maya, it becomes matter, material energy, you see. Matter means the absolute truth covered by Maya. So what does transcendental knowledge do? Om Agyanatimadandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Transcendental knowledge uncovers the absolute truth, which is already there. And who is the absolute truth? That amazing person who stands on the bank of the Jamuna in the full moon night of the Sharad season with a yellow dhoti and an astoundingly amazing peacock feather in his beautiful, beautiful hair, playing the fifth note on the flute and attracting the gopi girls and attracting everyone, attracting the whole, everyone's attracted by Krishna, you see, except for the demons who go running here and there, Bhagavad Gita says. Oh, Rishikesh, the whole world becomes joyful upon the recitation of your name, except for the demons who go running here and there. And as soon as the kirtan goes, they go heading for the hills. Ah, I'm getting out of here. This is crazy. I can't stand it, you see. The demons can't stand the kirtan. But the devotees, they relish the kirtan as the ultimate experience, the ultimate nectar, you see, to connect with Krishna, you see. Krishna, 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 hey, you see. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Raksamam. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. Just by calling out to Krishna with love, Krishna becomes manifest according to the degree of purity of our hearts. To that extent, we experience Krishna. So, how much Krishna do you want? Want a little bit of Krishna? Mm-hmm. Or you want the full Krishna? When it comes to the feast, how much do you want? A little tiny one grain of rice? Or you want a full plate? So we can have one grain of rice, Krishna consciousness. That's better than nothing. Or we can have full plate Krishna consciousness. You see? This verse is talking about full plate Krishna consciousness. When you've actually taken it, you know, and perfected it, become accomplished in this practice, then you can relish the sweetest nectar at every minute. Well, how long does it take? One could ask. Well, that's up to us. It takes time, to be honest. It takes years of practice, actually, to become very, very accomplished. However, it doesn't have to. You know the story of Maharaj Khadvanga? Yeah? That great, powerful Kshatriya king? He was earthly king. Now, we may think the heavenly planet sound like a great place for the Apsara girls and the Somaras wine and all the opulence of the heavenly planets, but the heavenly planets are sometimes attacked by the demons, and the demigods are completely in anxiety. Their wonderful palaces and their wonderful gardens are being ransacked, taken over by the demons, you see. So sometimes they're in great anxiety in the heavenly planets. So that happened one time. And the demigods could not fight off the attack of the demons. So they requested one earthly king. Maharaj Khadvanga was extremely powerful Kshatriya. These Kshatriyas, they are called Rajarshi. They are saintly king, you see. They're not just they're not political opportunists. They take the political post as a matter of duty to protect the citizens, to serve the citizens. They are not political opportunists. So this was one such great saintly king, Maharaj Khadvanga. So, on the request of the demigods, he fought valiantly in the other planets, the attack of the demons. After many, many long years of difficult struggle, non-stop fighting, he defeated the demons. And the demigods were so pleased. Oh, Maharaj Kadvanga was so pleased. Anything within our power to give you, we'll give you whatever you want. You just ask anything within our power, we will give you. He said, just tell me when I will die. Give me the knowledge of when I will die. Now, what could be the advantage of knowing when you will die? What do we need to do at the time of death? We have to remember Krishna. So if you knew exactly when you're going to die, then you could make sure to remember Krishna at the time of death and you'd be in good shape, right? So he was thinking like that. Let me know exactly when I'm going to die so I'll be Krishna conscious when it happens. And they said, oh, your death is just now coming. He said, thank you very much. And he took shelter of Krishna and went back to Godhead, you see. So actually, within a second, you see, if we have sufficient realization, sufficient determination, sufficient enthusiasm, sufficient intelligence, sufficient brain power, you see, we can immediately surrender to Krishna. But since we don't, we're Kali Yugites, we're dull-headed, unlucky, lazy, misguided, disturbed, agitated monsters, really, if you look at it from the transcendental perspective, we're a bunch of monsters, believe me. Like in the horror movies, you know. We're like monsters. We're just uncontrolled beasts. So it takes some time. But by the mercy of Prabhupada, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, by the mercy of advanced devotees, we can get out of the quagmire of material existence. We can enter into a sublime state of transcendental knowledge where we can relish the bliss at every minute. We can take, whether it's the good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, we can always relish the sweet nectar of Krishna's transcendental mercy pouring down upon our heads like Prabhupada told me in one letter, like torrents of rain in the monsoon season of India. So maybe there's some questions now. Where is that clipboard floating around? We only have four, or actually three. So make note, sheets of paper, everybody, for the next lecture. Okay. Can you please explain where the plenary portions of Lord Krishna, namely Lord Ramachandra, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna, appear in the entire sequence of expansions, beginning from Lord Krishna himself? I don't recall where that's listed, because there's one series of expansions where you have Krishna, you know, you have Balaram, you have Sankarshan, you have Narayan, you have Sankarshan, you have Mahavishnu, you know, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Chiradakshay Vishnu. Lord Ram is not mentioned in that branch, so there's obviously more than one branch. Actually, there's unlimited numbers of Vishnu forms. The Lord expands unlimitedly. So we hear that there's a form of Vishnu for every planet in the Vaikuntha realm. Well, how many Vaikuntha planets are there? Do you know? Does anyone know how many Vaikuntha planets there are? There's an infinite number of Vaikuntha planets. So if you wanted to list all the Vishnus in... If you wanted to make a list of all the Vishnus, how they come out of Krishna, get a whole chart of all the Vishnus, your chart would never end. You go on charting it for all of eternity. Millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions and sextillions and octillions and whatever they are, zillions and zillions and zillions of Vishnus could be charted how they're coming out of Krishna. You never come to the end of it. So I can't really say much more than that in this connection. It seems there is no place where one can find peace in this world. That is absolutely true. South Africa has crime. Europe is miserably cold. America has no culture, and India is dirty and crowded. Is there anywhere in this world where we can find peace? Absolutely not. This place is Marjaloka. Even if you go all the way to Brahmaloka, where the water is clean, there's no crime, even Brahmaloka is miserable. I mean, I just came from Mauritius. Think, well, it's a Hindu country. It should be pretty good, you know. It's this nice tropical island. There's mangoes and, you know, lychee fruit. Wow. And during lychee season, just it's like heavenly. But you know what? The Muslim population there is gradually growing. And the percentage of Muslims, the way they're heading is going to be Sharia law there eventually. Because the Muslims are having like 7 kids per family, and the Hindus are having like 3 kids per family. It's a matter of time before it's a Muslim country. So, you know, in Europe, the same thing is happening. In England, in Germany, in Denmark, you know, they're heading towards Sharia law eventually, the way the demographics are working. So, wow, you know. So where is the peace and happiness in this material world? The answer is you won't find it anywhere here. And the other side of the coin is you will find it everywhere here, wherever you remember Krishna. You can be in absolutely the most hellish place, you see. And if you remember Krishna, then you're in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of unlimited happiness. You can chant Hare Krishna on a beautiful mountaintop, or you can chant in a hellish neighborhood in downtown Johannesburg. Is it? Wherever you are taking Krishna's name, you are directly associating with that person who's the source of all existence, who's described so wonderfully in the Brahma Samhita. Venam kvanantamara vindadalaya taksam barha batam samasitam buddhasundarangam kandarpakotikamaniya visheshu shobam govindam adipurusham tamaham vajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is adept at playing on his flute with blooming eyes like lotus petals. You ever looked in somebody's eyes that were blooming like lotus petals? Well, that day when we can see Krishna, that's what we'll see. When you look into his eyes, you go, wow, they're blooming just like lotus petals. Lotus petal eyes, blooming, not a dead, dried up lotus flower, but blooming lotus petal eyes. And he has a peacock feather. His head is bedecked with a peacock feather. You see? And his body is tinged with the beautiful rain clouds, and there's a heavy rainstorm coming in. And you look at those clouds, and it's so beautiful, actually. The darkest blue rain clouds before a heavy rainstorm happened, you see? So his body is tinged with the hue of darkish blue rain clouds. You see? He's really good looking. And his beauty is attracting millions of cupids. You see, those cupids who are going around attracting everybody with their lust, their arrows of lust, you see, they completely forget everything about their attracting, their kama attractive business as soon as they see Krishna. Krishna is attracting millions and billions of cupids. So just imagine such a person, you see. Angani yasha sakalendra yadriti manti pashyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti ananda chinmaya sadujvila vigrahasya govindam adipurisham tamaham bhajami. This verse is really amazing. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose form is full of truth, bliss, substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. Wow. Take any one of his limbs, any one of Krishna's limbs eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. Now, if you could meet such a person, just imagine what an amazing experience that would be. Can you do it? Yes. How do you do it? Follow Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada is giving you the instructions how you can personally meet that person. So if you meet him, doesn't matter where you are. And we are meeting him right now, but it's, the neophyte level, We're meeting him already, but it's just a matter of waking up a little, getting out of the clouds of illusion, and actually experiencing Krishna. It's amazing, every time I think about it, when I was a young brahmachari, we're talking 1972, I was a young brahmachari and I used to write so many letters to Prabhupada asking questions. Because Prabhupada would answer my letters and answer the question. There's nothing more ecstatic than getting a letter on the return address that says A.C. Bhakti Dandi Goswami, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Just imagine getting a letter from Prabhupada. Wow, I still have some of those envelopes in my nectar chest. But you open up that letter and then he's there and he signs his name. And he wrote you a letter. Wow, letter from Prabhupada. But when I first joined, the policy was everybody in the movement who wants can write Prabhupada if they have a question. Any devotee in ISKCON can write Prabhupada a letter and get an answer. But the movement was growing and growing and growing, and it was, where's he going to translate the books if he has to answer letters all the time? So they said, okay, from now on, just the GBCs, the sannyasis, and the temple presidents. If you have a question, you ask your GBC, sannyasi, temple president. But I'd already experienced the nectar of corresponding with Prabhupada, okay? Now, I admit I was a bit of a rascal because I thought, I just can't tolerate this policy. I have to ask Prabhupada. And I didn't put my name on the return address so it might get through the security levels of filtering out the letters that aren't supposed to come into Prabhupada. But lo and behold, Prabhupada got the letter and he answered it. And Prabhupada mercifully gave me a loophole, actually. He said, actually, you should write the temple president. Now, GBC asked, the GBC, sannyasis, temple president, they should write me and you should ask them. He told me that. But then he said, but, this was Prabhupada's great kindness. He said, but if my disciple, if there is an urgent need, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. Wow. I had a loophole. Prabhupada gave me a loophole. If I had an urgent question that I couldn't answer any other way through the GBC, the temple president, the sannyasis, then I could write him directly with his permission. Jai. It was so great. But at the same time, he gave me a hint. And this hint was really amazing. He said, if you will simply serve Krishna with full sincerity of attitude 24 hours a day, then Krishna will personally come to you and answer all of your questions. So we're trying. We're trying to get to that stage. And that's why I like being here with all these Vaishnavas. I get empowered by you. Because you all, every Vaishnava has Shakti. And the more I associate with Vaishnavas, I get more and more Shakti by your Sangha, to help me actually come to that stage, that day when Krishna will actually personally come and answer all of my questions. I'm just praying for that day. Will it come soon, Okay. Many South African Hindus practice ritualistic tradition almost all the time, not understanding why they do it. For those few who try and understand it, the answers tend to be for materialistic gain. I see more value in Krishna devotion. How do I defend my position? Materialistic gain is the will-o'-the-wisp. It's an illusion. It's illusory. Whatever, what can you gain in this world that's eternally yours? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, there is nothing but the name to be had in all the 14 worlds. But even if you can gain the post of Brahmaji, which one can do, even if you get the topmost gain in this material world of getting the post of Brahmaji, that is only a temporary thing. It may seem very substantial, but actually this whole life is just a flash in eternity. So why are you wasting your energy, you know, spinning your wheels in the three modes of material nature, stuck in the muck of sense gratification? Why don't you get out of the mud and go somewhere to where you can eternally be situated happily, you idiot? You see? So take the Krishna consciousness. That's our request. Please explain Sambandha, Abhideva, and Prayojana. Well, yes, Sambandha, that's Madan Mohan. He's the deity of Sambandha. Abhideya, that is Radha Govinda. And Prayojana is Radha Gopina. So these are three stages. Sambandha means, you understand, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. Abhideya means you can engage in devotional service. You've got the theoretical understanding. You know who you are. You understand your relationship. Now do something with that knowledge. Don't just sit around. Do something. You know, go out and distribute some books. Do some deity worship. Go on Harinam. Cook a feast. String garlands. Do something with that. On that realization that you're the eternal servant of Krishna. Put it into practice. Because by putting it in, but you take that Sambandha Gyan and you add Abhideya to it, putting it in practice, then what happens? Prayojana. Then you become perfect in Krishna consciousness and you realize Krishna. Krishna will personally come to you and answer all your questions, you see, when you get to Prayojana. How is it that some devotees that have so much knowledge end up giving up the process of devotional service? Their knowledge is only theoretical. They don't have practical realization. Actually, this is one of the letters I got from Prabhupada, because I was I really wanted to read the books. You know, Prabhupada's books are wonderful. We'd love to read, but we were being engaged in so much preaching activities. Where's the time to read? I was thinking. So one day we were in New York City, and they were going up to do some kirtan by the city library. And I said, I have to write Prabhupada. I have this loophole from Prabhupada, and I have to take some time out and write him about this thing. It's bothering me a lot. So I took another subway and went to Tompkins Square Park. I went to the tree where Prabhupada started the movement. I went there and I wrote a letter to Prabhupada to that tree. Because Prabhupada was in Europe or somewhere at the time. But I felt really close to Prabhupada going to that tree, you see, in Tompkins Square Park. So I went there and wrote a letter and said, Prabhupada, I don't have enough time to read. I complained to Prabhupada. And of course, Prabhupada, you know, I got the sauce from Prabhupada, of course. The merciful sauce. He said, actually, there's much time in the day for study. He said, but what good is study without practice? He said, if you simply study and you don't practice, then that knowledge will become dry and useless in due course of time. And I've seen this practically. There was one boy coming to our center in Austin, really fired up, a nice boy from Lanka. He was really fired up. He got a Bhagavatam set from us, and he was on fire with the Bhagavatam. He would come, oh, I'm reading this, I'm reading that. He got about to the fourth canto. He was totally blissed out. He said, here, why don't you really make it perfect now and start chanting Japa? He said, oh, no, I'm not going to chant Hare Krishna. I just want to read the Bhagavatam. Well, about halfway through, he lost his steam and it was finished, you see. Because unless you actually apply this knowledge, even you may feel the knowledge is fantastic, but you don't want to actually practice it, that means you're simply thinking of being a big, big gyani. You're not really wanting to be a devotee, you see. So to be a jnani is okay. To be well-versed and learned in the scriptures is recommended. But you have to apply it. Otherwise, you will lose it in due course of time. You'll be back in the lab working at the Woolworths or something, selling handkerchiefs. You know what I mean? So do yourself a favor. Put this knowledge into practice. Make it your vrata, your vow that I will surrender to Krishna. I will follow these instructions of Prabhupada. I will follow the instructions of my spiritual master. I will work cooperatively with my temple authorities as a subordinate servant. I will do my share to make this movement a success. I'm not going to be lazy or crazy. I'm going to be a dedicated member of ISKCON and do my share to make this movement a success. You see? And by that absorption in practical devotional activities, the most amazing thing will happen. You will get amazing realizations that you didn't get just by studying the knowledge. I remember this was another thing. One year as a young brahmachari, I had some really nice service. I was in Gainesville. Now it's actually the longest standing Food for Life program in the history of ISKCON. At the University of Florida, the Plaza of the Americas, a big place on the campus by the library. The weather is warm all year long. You can go out all year long on the lawn and have kirtan, and stuvat prasadam. It's just ideal weather the whole year in northern Florida. I was out there. I was studying. I was going there and preaching every day. It was really great. But then, by Krishna's arrangement, I was transferred to our Houston temple. And under the plea of becoming the vice president. But then I got there. They'd already found somebody else. So they made me the head cook. And this is a traditional ISKCON temple of the 70s, where everybody went on a book distribution every day, except for one person. So I had to run the whole temple by myself. I did the artis, I cooked the prasadam, I made up the deity plate, transferred it, washed the plate, answered the phone, greeted the guests, offered. I did everything, and there was no time to do anything. I'd had no time to study at all. Absolutely no time to study. But once a week, I could study when I was making the burfi. And somehow or another, the burpee came out okay. I didn't burn it. Once a week, I could study. While that was my only study time, once a week, I could study while I was stirring the burpee. That was it, once a week. It was so intense. But then we had a tape. We didn't have MP3s in those days. It was cassettes was the technology. We still have a few around, floating around, cassettes. So there was a cassette tape, and Prabhupada was saying that actually one should always be engaged in study. One should always be studying, and one should always be engaged in practicing devotional service. I was going, well, how is it possible? How you can study, always be studying 24 hours a day and always be practicing 24 hours a day? Remember the example I gave of the chemistry lab and the chemistry lecture? The thing is, when you actually go to the laboratory and you put the theories into practice, that is part that you're actually also studying. You're studying how it works, how the knowledge actually works, how the formula actually works. So when you do devotional service, you're not cut off from the knowledge. If you're in the right mood, you're studying how the knowledge actually works. So in this way, you can study while you're doing the service. You see? While you're offering an arti, you can study. What is this phenomenon, offering an arti? You can analyze it. You see? Study it. When you're cutting vegetables or distributing books or whatever it may be in Krishna's service, you can analyze it and study it from the standpoint of Shastra. In that way, you... You can be deeply absorbed in service and deeply absorbed in philosophical perspective at the same time. And in this way, if you combine the two, you keep that philosophical perspective and you engage completely in devotional service, you see, then you'll never leave. When worshipping Tulsi Devi, one time a devotee that was saying the pranam mantra to Tulsi said, Shri Vrindayai Tulsi Devi. And one sannyasi stopped him and asked him, where is Shri in the songbook? But I know a lot of Vaishnavas, a lot of sannyasis say Shri Vrindayai. That's not a question. It's a comment. Actually, it's better to stick with the what's in the songbook, because now we will add Shri Vrindayai. And then next year it'll be Shri Shri Vrindayai. And next it'll be Shri Shri Shri. In other words, 10,000, if we start adding little things, now, every year we add something new to make it a little more exciting, right? Then 10,000 years from now, what will ISKCON look like? If we keep adding things, the actual prayers were given by Prabhupada, okay? When I joined ISKCON, there was no tasteless worship. Prabhupada gave us the mantras. Why don't we just stick to the mantras that Prabhupada gave us instead of wanting to add things, you know? If you think we have to add something to make it new and exciting, it means you don't understand what is Krishna. Krishna, as he is new and exciting. We don't need a new, enhanced version of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the same as Krishna Navayovanam. We don't have to add new things to our kirtans. We can do the same kind of kirtan that Prabhupada introduced. We don't need to add new things to the kirtans. You see? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can go on chanting that mantra for millions and millions of years and become perfect. The songbook says Vishnu Bhakti, but many devotees say Krishna Bhakti. Actually, the original instruction from Prabhupada, you can look it up in the Veda base. I remember when the letter came, Prabhupada told us to say Vishnu Bhakti in the original name. So, since I'm personal friends with the editor of the BBT publications, Sriman Davida Prabhu, and since the songbook has come out via the BBT, and they have Krishna Bhakti in the official BBT songbook, I discussed this point with, I asked Davida, why? Prabhupada originally said Vishnu Bhakti. And he said, well, one time in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said it should be Krishna Bhakti. But it's not documented anywhere that, you know, when he said it, to who he said it. So he admitted that actually Vishnu Bhakti was, because it's right there in the, you can see it's a letter signed by Prabhupada. So my take on it is, I'll go either way. If you're leading Tulsi prayers and you say Krishna Bhakti, I'll go with Krishna Bhakti. If you say Vishnu Bhakti, when you lead it, I'll go with Vishnu Bhakti. That's my take on it after, you know. Because I trust Davida's Prabhu's judgment. He felt that Krishna Bhakti is legitimate because it is said, someone said that Prabhupada said in Vrindavan, and I accept that. But at the same time, he admitted it was having it written is a very he did admit it was more authoritative to say Krishna Vishnu because it's actually there in the Veda base. It's a letter that Prabhupada wrote. So I'll go either way. I'll go either way. If I'm leading, I'll go Vishnu Bhakti. But if you're leading Krishna, I'll go with Krishna because it's the same thing. Krishna and Vishnu are the same person. There's no difference between Vishnu and Krishna in one sense, you see. I have no problem. We are called Vaishnavas. What does that mean? Devotees of Vishnu. Isn't it? Yeah. So, I have no problem being a devotee of Vishnu. I'm a Vaishnava. I'm trying to be anyway. Actually, I don't claim to be a Vaishnava. I aspire to become a Vaishnava. That's my position. All right. Hare Krishna, it is described that Krishna is impartial. But he seems to be partial to the devas when he kills the demons on the request of the devas. Can you explain how Krishna is impartial? It's a fact that Krishna is an equal opportunity employer. Anybody who wants to be a devotee is welcome. There's no consideration of race, creed, nationality, age. Krishna makes no discrimination. If you want to be his devotee, everybody is welcome. So in that sense, Krishna is fully impartial. But if you choose to not be a devotee, he deals with you in a different way. But you have the equal opportunity to be his devotee. In that sense, he's impartial. But he definitely makes a distinction between the devotees and the demons. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata duskritam. He protects the devotees and he annihilates the demons. So he definitely distinguishes. But everyone has the opportunity to be a devotee. In that sense, he's impartial. We accept Valmiki's Ramayana as bona fide is Valmiki in our disciplic succession. He's not in the list of 32, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, but there's many people that we accept as bona fide spiritual masters who are in the line of bona fide knowledge coming from Krishna that are not listed in the 32 list. I mean, you look at the list, there's so many that they'll be accepted as bona fide spiritual masters that aren't listed in that list of 32. What if someone is a member of Hare Krishna, but still he does not follow all the laws of Hare Krishna? Can you listen to that person or not? Sure, I'm happy to listen to him. Do I have to agree with him? No, but I'll listen to him. Because I have some realizations about Krishna that I've gotten from Prabhupada. I want people to listen to me. And I know that if I won't listen to you, you won't listen to me. Therefore, I'm going to listen to you because I want you to listen to me. I have some very good realizations about Krishna consciousness. I want the whole world to listen to them, you see. So I know that if I'm not willing to listen to you, you won't be willing to listen to me. Therefore, we are willing to listen to everybody. Lord Chaitanya listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for how long? A couple of minutes? No, for many, many days, he heard Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presenting Mayavadi philosophy. You know the story? Yeah. And then finally, Sarvabhauma, because all the, normally the disciples inquire from the guru, right? Finally, he said, why aren't you asking any questions? Sarvabhauma asked Gauranga, why are you not asking any questions, my dear student? He said, the meaning of the Vedanta Sutras is like the brilliant sun, but your explanation is like the covering cloud. So sure, I'm only listening to anybody, but if somebody is off the track, we'll let them reveal their heart. Find out what their difficulty is so you can help them get back on the track. That's all. Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself? A sketch of your life in ISKCON. Well, I could try. That'd be pretty thumbnail sketch. Wow, I go on for like an hour. I don't know, we only have 10 minutes. if I really get into it, I go on for an hour or two telling them. It's an interesting, every devotee has an interesting story. Your story is just as good as my story, Everybody has an amazing story. One time, Prabhupada asked Brahmananda, what was your story? How did you come to Krishna consciousness? And Brahmananda said, well, some friend of mine brought me, but he did not join, but I joined. And Prabhupada said, yeah, the same thing happened to me. His friend Narendranath Malik dragged him, you must hear this sadhu. And Narendranath Malik did not join, but Prabhupada joined. So, to give a sketch of my life, all I can say is it's been pretty ecstatic. been really ecstatic. I've gone through a lot of amazing adventures, and every year it becomes more and more and more amazing. I'm telling you, it becomes more and more amazing. The deeper I get into this process, the sweeter it gets, the more exciting it gets. So that's about all I can say. I don't have much time to say much more at this point. We have a few more questions. How does one become detached from one's material desires? It's very simple. You simply become filled up with spiritual desires, you see. Vishayava nivartante niraharashyadehina rasavarshang vishopyashva parang divishranivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, but the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes subtly fixed in consciousness. So you don't have to become. You see, the Mayavadis, they're in a very pitiful position, actually. You know, they say, you know, don't look at women, don't do this, don't do that, don't, 18, 19. It's a very difficult position, you see. Denying their material desires. I tried that pathway for some time before I met the devotees. I was trying the 1880 path. Deny. I was actually going to go to India. I was on my way to India to be a sadhu, an Indian sadhu, a renunciate, a holy beggar. That was my plan. I was on the way to New York to catch a freighter, work on a freighter and get a free passage to India and just give up the material world and just be a holy mendicant in India. That was my career path that I chose, to be a mendicant in India. But then one night, I went to my parents' house to, you know, leave all my possessions there and say goodbye forever. But one night I had an amazing realization before I headed out for New York. And I wrote it down on a piece of paper. It was so profound. I denied until I could deny no longer, and then I had to start accepting. So you can try denying your material desires, but you're never going to get free from them until you learn how to accept a spiritual desire. Because spiritual desire automatically burns away all material desires, you see. So don't be so much worried about material desires, you see. Just try to ignite the fire of spiritual desire within your heart. To become a pure devotee, to please your spiritual master, to please the devotees, to please Srila Prabhupada, to distribute books, to make South Africa Krishna conscious. Just try to ignite the fire of spiritual desire within your heart like a burning passion. And all your material desires will just go slithering away. How often should we wash our chanting bag whenever it gets soiled? Please share a favorite Prabhupada memory experience.
I have a question regarding the
way. Speak up.
We should fill up with our desires, with the spiritual desires. We should fill up our desires.
Fill the heart with spiritual desire. Yes. And material desire is finished.
Sometimes devotees fill up so much spiritual desires, when they are not fulfilled, they become frustrated.
Ah. So she's raising a point. This is my wife, Vishnupriya Devi Das. She travels with me all over the world, a great sacrifice of her personal comforts. So, people have spiritual desires, but then they don't satisfy them and they're frustrated. That means there's some, if you're frustrated, that means there's some tinge of material desire in your heart. Because the desire is pure spiritual desire, there's no question of frustration. But if there's frustration, that means, you know, I joined this movement and I wanted to be one of the leaders, you know. I've been here for 2 years, and why they haven't made me temple president yet? And you say, with spirit of desire, I want to be the temple president. I want to be the regional secretary. You know, I want to be. You know, I wanted. I wrote an article for Back to Godhead, and they didn't print it. And I wanted to be a famous author in the movement, and they wouldn't print my article, and I'm frustrated. And no, it means there's a material tinge. You see, you should have desires that are completely pure without any tinge, and then you'll never be frustrated.
Like, for example, the book distributors and preachers goes out.
Huh?
The book distributors and preachers goes out. They try to distribute books, and they come into sometimes...
The book distributor?
Yeah, sometimes they are also frustrated because they
couldn't... Well, now you're talking about transcendental frustration. That's a whole other ball game. I know when I talked with one wonderful book distributor in the U.S. His name is Rai Natai Prabhu. And our place where Austin is, there's some really big festivals that happen there. It's a famous place of music festivals, Austin, Texas. They call it the live music capital of the world. There's some amazing festivals that happen, music festivals that happen there. So the book distributors love to come to Austin during these festivals, and they can do tons of books. So Rai Natai was there, and he sold all of his books. He had no books left. He came begging, "Do you have any books?" So he came over to pick up a case of Higher Tastes and gave a nice donation, $100. He gave extra money, just in the mood of love. He gave me a $100 bill for the case of Higher Tastes. I don't know how many rand that is. It's a lot of rand, $100 U.S. But anyway, he was talking. He said, "You know, I get really frustrated when I do Sankirtan. Because, you know, I'm out distributing all day, and now it's time to, you know, take prasadam, take rest, get ready for another day. But I feel so frustrated going back to my Sankirtan van. How can I go back to take rest and take prasadam when these people don't have Prabhupada's books yet?" And I was thinking, wow, what a great saint he is. He's frustrated because he feels this burning frustration in his heart that not every man, woman, and child on the face of this planet has a full set of Prabhupada's books in their house yet. And that's his frustration. He says, "I want to take birth after birth until everybody has Prabhupada's books." Now that's wonderful frustration. I bow down at the feet of anybody who's frustrated in that way. Please give me some of your frustration. Please bless me with some of your mood of frustration. Okay. Our time is up.
There's one more.
Huh?
I think finish them up.
I can do more. I'll finish them up. All right. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is explained that the living entity is not the doer, but rather the modes of material nature are. I do not understand this. Please clarify. When you come to the position of being envious of Krishna, and you want to try to enjoy independently of Krishna, you do fall under the influence of the modes of nature, and you're carried along just like a piece of merchandise on a conveyor belt in a factory. You're just carried along by the modes. That's a fact. You just carry it along. Just like a dog, he has to bark. He has no choice. You see? So we're carried along by the modes. You may say, then why am I responsible? Why do I get karmic reactions in? I didn't do it. The modes did it. But you chose to try to be independent of Krishna. Therefore, you have to take whatever comes when you do that. Now, here's an example to help you understand it. Let's say somebody, you know, some terrorist, you know, they caught some terrorist, and he was going to blow up the Capitol building or something, assassinate the prime minister, and blow up all the members of parliament during a session, completely wipe out your national government. Let's say they caught him, and I said, "Okay, I will give you the death penalty. You know, this is pretty severe crime." He said, "But no, I'm not responsible. I was just following my authority within Al Qaeda. What can I do? You know, Al-Qaeda somehow brainwashed me and convince me to join Al-Qaeda. And if I don't do this, they're going to kill me. So you can't blame me. I'm just an innocent victim of Al-Qaeda. I'm not really responsible. Of course, actually, the example would be he actually did it. He actually did the terrorist act is a better example. The terrorist does some terrorist act, and then he claims innocence because I was just following I was forced to do this by my Al-Qaeda leaders, you see. But you chose to join Al-Qaeda. That was your foolishness, you see. Therefore, you're responsible now for whatever you do. As an Al-Qaeda member, you're responsible for whatever you do. You got to take the responsibility. You can't blame it on Osama bin Laden. You have to take the responsibility. You made the choice. Now you take the reaction. So he was carried along by his own higher authorities within Al-Qaeda, but yet he is personally responsible. So in the same way, the living entity, once he tries to enjoy independently of Krishna, even though he's carried along by the modes, he's responsible for everything he does. He gets a karmic reaction for everything he does. But Krishna is very kind. He can quit Al-Qaeda whenever he wants. He can give up the Al-Qaeda network. He can give up being a terrorist, an anti-Krishna terrorist at any time. Then, my dear Lord, I've been rebelling against you long enough. Now I will surrender to you. At any moment, you can do that, and you can get off of the conveyor belt and not be manipulative of the modes anymore. So now the icing on the cake, a little Prabhupada remembrance. Let's see. I think my favorite Prabhupada remembrance is when I first had my first interchange with Srila Prabhupada. First, we face to face, one on one. I think that's my favorite memory of all of them. I had joined without ever having met Prabhupada, just by hearing about him and meeting his disciple, His Holiness Vishnujana Maharaj. I was convinced to become Prabhupada's disciple without having met him face to face. But there was an opportunity then to meet him, and wow, it's great. So we were in Los Angeles, and we just gone had the Ratha Yatra, wonderful Ratha Yatra. We're talking 1971, summer of 71 in California. We had a wonderful Ratha Yatra in San Francisco, and now we came down to Los Angeles, where Prabhupada was going to be there for quite some time, initiating many, many, many disciples, giving many, many lectures. It was really a wonderful time. Devotees there from all over the ISKCON world. It was an amazing atmosphere in that Los Angeles temple. So Prabhupada then would take his famous morning walk, and they would drive him from the temple to Venice Beach or Cheviot Hills Park, and they would drive him back to the temple. He wouldn't walk from the temple, but he would get to a park or the beach, and he'd walk from there. So they would drive him back to the temple from his walk. And then they had a wonderful, wonderful system. When Prabhupada would come back, that we would all line up. Prabhupada's quarters were in the back of the temple building. There was a sidewalk along the side of the temple building, and he would go to his stairway. His door was in the back of the building. So he would come down the sidewalk, go around to the back side of the building. So we would line up along that sidewalk, and there wasn't that many of us, that we could all line up along the sidewalk, and we would, each one of us would have a flower, and we would offer Prabhupada that flower. As he would come, he would stop with each disciple. Just imagine Prabhupada personally comes, just you and Prabhupada one-on-one. You hand Prabhupada your flower, and he hands you one back from the basket. That was the system. It was a wonderful thing. You get to have your own little moment, just me and Prabhupada, So I was standing near the front with Vishnujana Maharaj. He got a hug. Wow. He got a big wow. But I felt I was hugged also, because I was one of his men. But anyway, I gave my flower to Prabhupada. He gave his flower to me. And I have it now. Now, to see Prabhupada is, it's like being in the spiritual world and seeing Krishna. I mean, it's such a powerful experience to actually see him in living flesh, form, you see. It's very powerful. It's like seeing Krishna. It's an amazing, awesome experience. So I wanted to have, I put, as Prabhupada continued down the line and finished the line, I stood on the stairways there, the corner. I still remember the spot. I still remember that spot. I can show you. If you ever come to L.A., I'll show you the spot where I was standing, where Prabhupada was. But anyway, Prabhupada comes down, finishes the line. He's walking back to his quarters, and I'm standing there just to get another darshan. I call it drinking Prabhupada into your heart through your eyes. That's what it was like. I wanted to drink Prabhupada into my heart through my eyes, you see. So I'm standing there watching Prabhupada come by, just drinking him into my heart through my eyes, you see. And Prabhupada looks up at me. He notices me standing there. This is the first time I've been noticed by Prabhupada. Oh, wow, Prabhupada noticed me. And, wow. It's the ultimate thrill. Prabhupada noticed me. Oh, Krishna. Prabhupada noticed me. And he noticed I wasn't in line. And he thought maybe he didn't get a flower yet. So Prabhupada held up, it was no verb, no words, it was all body language and facial expression, you see. Prabhupada held up a flower, like, did you get a flower yet? He was so considerate that he wanted to make sure that I didn't miss out on getting a flower. Of course, I had got it. I had it here in my hand. I held it up and nodded my head, and I was so happy. Big smile on my face, you know. I held up the flower and nodded, oh, yes. I showed him, yes, I have the flower. And then Prabhupada proceeded on the way. But that was such a special thing for me, that Prabhupada cared so much for some, you know, wild renegade character that just shaved up and put on a dhoti, you know. He cared so much for me that he wanted to make sure I hadn't missed out on getting a flower. And that moment sits forever in my heart. And Prabhupada sits forever in my heart. That's the wonderful mercy of Srila Prabhupada. He wants that not one jiva soul in this entire material world shall miss out on the mercy of Krishna. This is the great kindness of Prabhupada that I realized in that moment. Let's see. So there's a little anecdote from Prabhupada, my experience with Srila Prabhupada. So now the questions have run out, and I mean, our time is up. And I'd really, really thank you. It's so wonderful to see so many bright faces here today. Such a wonderful thing to see so many bright-faced devotees. And I thank you so much for being here and being part of our movement. And please just fully absorb yourself, your whole life, in making, in going deeper and deeper into the ocean of Krishna consciousness and making this movement so successful that the whole world will join this movement as soon as possible. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.